Open your Bibles up to Mark chapter 6. We're starting in verse 30. We're going through the end of the chapter. So Mark chapter 6, verse 30, going through the end of the chapter. Sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. Sometimes things happen just like we expect them to, and sometimes they don't. You get what I'm saying, right? I'm setting something up here. So let's talk about Colorado. So I went to Colorado last week with some dear friends. Can you throw the first photos up here? We were in the mountains, and so we weren't quite in where all the snow was, but we were hiking all through that. This was one of the sunsets or sunrises. They blur together. I don't know, but I've got two more photos of sunsets and sunrises. I mean, that's just unbelievable, right? And so busy semester, I needed some time away. I needed to take a break. And so I go with three friends. We're hunting and hiking and doing all sorts of stuff in these mountains. Now, if you may not want to see the next picture, if you don't like seeing dead things. Now, I will tell you, everything you buy at the grocery store had to die somehow, basically, right? But if you don't like seeing dead things, I get that. My wife loves live animals, not dead animals. And so we have this thing in our marriage where they have to stay in my office. That's it. So look away if you don't want to see the mule deer that the Lord allowed for me that's now in my freezer at the house, all right? I'm just saying. That's where it is. All right, look away if you don't want to see it because I'm going to show it. All right, next picture. Look at that thing. Yeah. So that was, you can take it down now so that people that don't want to see it don't have to look at it. That was a 280-yard shot. It's the longest I've ever shot to take anything. It's kind of what you do out there where you spot and then you stalk using your binoculars. And so that part was really awesome. But I failed. Do you want me to tell you how? Well, you've got to stay to the end of the message. You're going to stay to the end of the message anyway. All but the five of you that want to get lunch quickly. This is not going to be a super long message. So anyway, all right, let me set it up this way. It's time for a test. Can anybody relate? Yeah, how many of you have tests this week? That's just brutal. I'm sorry. Like most of your tests were last week, right? But there's some faculty members that you got to take it today or tomorrow before you go home for fall break. We live on this campus in a world of tests. I said fall break. I meant Thanksgiving. So today we meet our disciples. Look at verse 30. I'll give you your main idea in a minute, but I got to set it up because look what's happening here. There's Mark, as he's laying this text out, is flashing back a little bit. And he's saying the apostles returned to Jesus. And when they returned to Jesus, they told him all they had done and all they had taught. Now, you remember from the last time that Jesus in chapter 6, verse 7, sent out the apostles and he told them when they went out to shake the dust off their feet if people didn't believe what they said, to stay in the houses of those that would receive them. And the text tells us in verse 12, they went out, they proclaimed that people should repent. They casted out many demons. They anointed oil with many who were sick and they healed them. So what are they telling Jesus about when they come back? Hey, have you ever had a really exciting moment, whatever it may be, and you get home and you're excited to tell mom and dad or friends or others, and you just bust in, maybe, just maybe, it was that coffee date that you had, and you're busting in with all of the girls or the guys, and probably more girls than guys, and all the girls are looking at you going, tell us how it went. And you're like, oh. You've been there, right? You can't even get the words out. Oh, he actually paid for my coffee. It was awesome. Like, and then the guys go in acting all chill, and the guys are like, hey, how'd it go? Good. But inside, you know, he's got all these butterflies going, and he's like, they're excited, y'all. Don't miss this. The disciples have been sent out. They cast out demons. They healed people. I missed it. I don't even know what they said. It doesn't matter. If I preach somewhere and somebody gets saved, I can't wait to tell somebody. Hey, you won't believe it. Somebody got saved. They went from death to life. They're going to be in heaven for all eternity. Jesus is awesome, y'all. they come back to Jesus and they're talking to Jesus and they're not going, oh. They come back to Jesus and they're like, Jesus, you won't believe what happened. And Jesus is like, I know. I already know it all. Just wait to see what's coming next. But they come back and they tell Jesus. Jesus is all excited. I bet he was a good listener. I bet he sat there and smiled as he knew everything they were telling him. And I bet he sat there and he said, good job. Well done. You believed. I sent you out with nothing. Don't take the beggar's sack. Don't take extra food. Don't take extra clothes. Just go and trust me. And they did. And they came back. And it was awesome. They made the last shot. They won the game. This time. And so Jesus says, good job. It's time for the next test. And the next test is going to show up. And they're going to have to learn that Jesus is enough. So what's our main idea going to be for us today? It's that Jesus is enough. And you're probably sitting there thinking, oh yeah, I got that. No, you don't. I don't have it either. Because every day we wake up to a new problem and a new challenge or something new that we're facing, and we have a forgetful faith, and so we forget all of the things Jesus has done for us in the past, and there's something new facing us today, and in our minds, we start getting anxious, and we're like, oh, goodness. But Jesus is enough. Here's how we're going to break this down. Here's our outline. First, we're going to see Jesus' compassion is enough to satisfy our hunger. Then we're going to see that Jesus' power is enough to calm our fears. And then we're going to see that Jesus' mercy is enough to heal our brokenness. So we're going to start out with a story that you're all familiar with. But I got to set it up for you in this way, because there's two things going on in this particular chapter. One of the aspects is the disciples are being tested again. And what they think they're getting is not actually what's going to happen. What you anticipate or expect is not actually what's going to take place. But there's another thing that's happening in this chapter, because remember, the whole book of Mark is about Mark telling us that Jesus is the Son of God. And he continues to show us that Jesus is the Son of God, that Jesus is enough, that Jesus is who he says he is. And that comes into today, particularly as we look at Jesus being greater than anybody in the Old Testament, especially Moses or Joshua. Jesus is the greater Moses. Jesus is the greater Joshua. And so we're going to see this as we walk through this particular text. We start out with the expectation, and then we're going to move to the feeding of the 5,000, where we see that Jesus can satisfy our hunger. Here's what we see. After they told him everything, all excited, they tell him all about it. He says, great. He looks at them and he says to them, come away by yourselves to a desolate place. Three times in this text, desolate place is mentioned. Remember, anytime there's repetition in Scripture, it's because they want us to take note of that. Underline, star, highlight. Desolate place is mentioned on purpose. And it's mentioned repeatedly in Mark, a book of few words. So we're going to go to a desolate place and rest a while. This is a good thing. We all need rest. We need to build in margin. So when you go home for Thanksgiving, make sure you take some time to rest. Make sure you take some downtime so that when you come back and you have that sprint to the end with finals and all of that, you're ready to go. So we need rest. So this is their expectation. We're going to a desolate place. We're going to rest. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat. Man, I'm so busy, I don't even have time to eat. There they were. Some of you feel that. And so they need to take time to rest. And so here's what happens in verse 32. They went away in the boat to a desolate place. Time number two is mentioned. By themselves. Here's what's in their mind. I'm going to get a weekend with just Jesus and my boys. That's it. I get to hang out with the boys. Nothing major is going to happen. Here's my expectation. And that expectation is not going to happen. Now, many saw them going and recognized them. So they ran there on foot. I don't know how this worked. They're in a boat. Others are on foot. They're running because they want to be there with them. And so they run from the towns, and they got there ahead of them. And so when they went ashore, they saw a great crowd. Now, what would you do? My expectation is I'm going to have this but things have shifted or changed and something's different. And sometimes that allows us then to get upset or frustrated. I thought I was going to be able just to go out and hang with my buddies. And now you've crashed a party and you're third wheeling. Or I thought I was going to get the date with that girl or that guy. And now all these other people are around and I don't get to talk to them. So what do? I put my lower lip out so far that my foot steps on it and I pout and I sulk and I get in my funk and I start cycling downward because things didn't go my way and I don't like it. Have you ever been there? You have younger brothers or sisters? Have you seen them in their terrible twos where they don't get their way and they'll stomp that foot and throw that chest back and you can just see it in the body language. I don't like this. I want what I want and I want it now. We're civilized, so we do it in a different way. We control the foot stomp and the chest throw. We just start moping. I guarantee that's where they were. They saw them. They're there. But look at how Jesus responds to this. When Jesus saw the great crowd, he had compassion. Do you know when Jesus looks at us and we are wandering around like lost sheep, that's what he does for us too, is he has compassion on us. You know that Jesus has compassion for you? Even though you didn't get into that school you wanted, or you didn't get the ring by spring, or you didn't get the date, or you didn't get the grade on the assignment, and some of y'all, come on, some of y'all are ridiculous. I got a 97 and I'm moping because I should have had 100. Like, I know some of you. And then you're going to your faculty member to complain about the 3 points you didn't get because that question wasn't worded fairly. Yeah, you're out there. I get you. Jesus had compassion on them. And then look at what it says here. Because they were like sheep without a shepherd. Have you ever heard that phrase before? You have. You've read it. You've read it in Numbers 27:17, where Moses was praying, Lord, would you send somebody else? Because we don't want your people to be like a sheep without a shepherd. And Moses, in that particular text, Joshua comes. And Joshua is the next leader. But this is a key word in here telling us that there is a greater Moses, that there is a greater Joshua, and that greater Moses and greater Joshua is Jesus. And so Jesus is there. And think about all the different aspects. They're in a desolate place. They're in a wilderness. There's a great crowd, just like a great crowd of Israel. They're going to need to be fed, just like there was manna that came. And so all of these indicators are pointing back, and he's saying to us, this is the Son of God. This is the greater Moses. He's saying they're like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teach them. It grew late. The disciples came up to him and were Captain Obvious. This is a desolate place. Really? I couldn't look around and see that. It's a desolate place. What's your point? It's getting late. That's what it means when the sun goes down. What's your point? Send them away. Whoa. You want your alone time with Jesus, huh? Send them away. There's actually a good concern here. Send them into the countryside and the villages to buy something to eat. There were 5,000 men, plus women and children. There were more people here than the cities that were surrounding them actually had in those cities. And the disciples are saying, you got to disperse them. There is nowhere for them to eat. There's no food out here. There's nothing. You have got to disperse them. Jesus, this will not work. So Jesus responds to them and he says, you give them something to eat. I can't. God, you've called me to do something. I can't do it. There is no way I can physically make this happen. I cannot make it happen. I can't do it. It's impossible. Jesus is enough. You give them something to eat. Jesus, you don't understand. Let me explain this to you. Shall we go and buy 200 denarii, 8 months worth of salary, some have estimated worth of bread, and give it to them to eat? And he said to them, how many loaves do you have? Well, now Mark moves fast. So Mark doesn't tell us what we find out in John. John tells us that Andrew found a boy, and there was a boy who didn't have enough, but he had something. He brought the measly things that he had and put them before Jesus, and Jesus did great things with them. There's a lesson for us there too. We don't have enough to do what Jesus has called us to do, but we can take what we do have and we can put it before Jesus and we can let Jesus use it to do what Jesus wants to do because Jesus is enough. How many loaves do you have? Go and see. They found out. We have 5 loaves and 2 fish. Jesus says to them, think about this. Sit them down. Jesus, you didn't hear us right. We said 5, not 5,000. Sit them down on the green grass. Now, why does Mark use green grass there? Green grass tells us this is the time of the Passover. It's in that season. Well, that's gonna spark some things in our mind. So he sits them down in groups. How did he sit them down in groups? By hundreds and by fifties. Does that bring anything to mind? Exodus 18, where he was dividing them up into hundreds and fifties and the children of Israel. And so there's flashbacks here. And he takes the 5 loaves and the 2 fish. And this has to bring forward the Lord's Supper in your mind, because he takes the loaves and he takes the fish. When he takes the loaves, he gives thanks for it and he breaks it and he gives it to them. He's laying the groundwork for here. None of this is accidental. He takes it and he says a blessing and he broke the loaves and he gave it to the disciples to set before the people. And can you imagine being there that day where the disciples know there's only 5 loaves and there's 2 fishes? Now, there are some commentators who say that Jesus hid all the bread in a cave and they like formed some secret conga line or something and began to pass the bread up from the loaves, and that Jesus had this long robe on and they put it through one and he'd bring it out the other. Come on, that's ridiculous, y'all. Jesus is God. If he wants to take the molecular structure of bread and fish and multiply that into such a way, he can do that. Because just like in the wilderness of the Old Testament, manna fell from heaven and it was provided. He didn't need the 5 loaves and the 2 fish to be able to feed all of these people. But he took what was there and he blessed it and he gave thanks and he began to break it. And as he began to break it, it just kept breaking off. And they took it and they gave it to everybody sitting there. And then he says, go collect everything that's left over. And there's 12 baskets. How big were the baskets? I don't know. Why were there 12? I don't know. But there were 12 disciples. Maybe he wanted to make sure that every one of them had a basket that had more in it when he finished than when they started, because Jesus is enough. Yeah, but you don't understand. I can't do this. Could we feed this crowd with 5 loaves and 2 fish? No. 5 spicy chicken sandwiches and 2 waffle fries? No. 2 of those are mine. Do you see what he's doing here? So he gave it to them. They set it before the people. They divided it up. They all ate. They were satisfied. Flashback to Herod. They get drunk. They have a dance. They killed John the Baptist. Here's a different feast. It's a feast with Jesus, and they were satisfied. So they took up 12 baskets of broken pieces and of the fish, and those who ate were 5,000 men. Matthew tells us it was 5,000 men besides women and children, so there were more. So here's what we need to recognize time and time again. And Dr. Bowden, Friday a week ago, mentioned this, us failing over and over. In the wilderness in Exodus, Jesus provides the food. Oh, but we want meat. Where's the water? Where do we trust Jesus? Time and time again, we see it in Exodus. We see it in our own lives. We see it here. So now we move from that. And then it says in verse 45, immediately, Mark's favorite word, he made the disciples get in the boat. So take note here. He made the disciples get in the boat. Why? Mark doesn't tell us, but John does. In chapter 6, John says that the crowd wanted to make him king because he provided all this food for them. And so they wanted to then make him the ultimate king. So Jesus is like, no, it's not time yet. That's not who I am. You're still misunderstanding who Jesus is. And so he tells the disciples, get in the boat. And he tells them to go across to the other side to Bethsaida. They don't arrive at Bethsaida, spoiler alert, but that's where they're supposed to go. So they did what Jesus told them to do. They were obedient. They got in the boat. They went the direction that they were supposed to go. And here's what I want to say to you. Sometimes Jesus calls us to do something, and when we obey, we find out it's hard. We obey what Jesus said to do, and we find out it doesn't work out exactly like we think it's going to work out. And Jesus still called us to do it. And we still have to go. There are countless stories of missionaries who went overseas on the mission field to try to tell people who didn't know about Jesus. And it was hard. And it wasn't easy. And this is what we see in this text. We'll get there. They get in the boat. It goes before him to the other side of Bethsaida. He dismissed the crowd, doesn't tell us how. After that, he took leave of them. He went up on the mountain to pray. Boy, if Jesus is going up on the mountain to pray, we better make sure we go up on the mountain to pray. We better spend that alone time with Jesus. We better have our quiet times. And evening came and the boat was out on the sea. How did he see it? I don't know. Was he on the mountain? Could he see it? He's Jesus. He can do whatever he wants. And so here, the boat's on the sea. He's alone. He sees they are making headway painfully because the wind was against them. It was about the fourth watch of the night. And the fourth watch of the night, 3 to 6 a.m., so this was early in the morning. Really wasn't late in the night for us. It was early in the morning. And it says he came to them. How? He didn't part the waters by raising a staff and walking across on dry ground. He just said, I don't need to part the waters. I'm going to walk on them. And as the waves carried him, he walked on top of the waves and began to walk out to them in the boat. And when he's walking out to them in the boat, how would you respond? I think I would have looked out. I would have been very much like they were. What in the world is this? He just broke 5 loaves and 2 fishes and fed 5,000 men plus women and children. And yet when they see him, they don't get it. It says he meant to pass them by. What does that mean? Okay, I don't know. Here's my best guess. He meant to pass them by, I think actually alludes back to Exodus. It alludes back to 1 Kings, where in Exodus, where Moses says, let me see your face, and God says, you can't, but you can hide in the cleft of this rock. I'll put my hand over you. When I pass by, I'll let you see my back. Moses allowed God to pass by, and then he saw him. I think what the indication here is that he was passing by, meaning he was showing them who he was. Nobody can walk on water except God. That's what Job tells us. And Jesus is walking on water. He is the Son of God. This is who he is. Do you not get it yet? This guy can do whatever he wants to because he's God. He created it all. And so I think that's what it means. There are some others who would say things like, this is from the Peter's perspective and he's talking to Mark. And so it looks like he was passing them by, but he didn't actually pass them by. I don't know. But when they saw him walking on the water, what happened? They thought it was a ghost and they cried out, for they all saw him and they were terrified. Sounds reasonable. But immediately spoke to him. And what did he say? Take heart, it is I. What he really says here is take heart, I am. Have you ever heard the words I am before? In a burning bush, in Exodus. Who are you? I am. Who am I supposed to tell them that sent me? I am. Who is this guy walking out on the water to the boat? Take heart, I am. Do you not get it yet? Do you not see it yet? Jesus is the Son of God. Jesus is enough. Jesus is all we need. Christ is literally all we need in this life. Do you not get it yet? No, we don't. Don't be afraid. And then listen to how Mark tells the story. And he got in the boat with them, and the wind ceased, just stopped. And they were utterly astounded, for they did not understand about the loaves because their hearts were hardened. That's pretty harsh, right? But they didn't get it, just like we don't. Do you not remember what he did with the loaves? This is no big deal. He's just walking on the water. The wind stops. No big deal. He's done that before. The wave ceased. Shh, stop it. Remember? He's done that before. This is no big deal. Do you not get who he is yet? No. But now, if we were to look at what Matthew talks about in this, Peter didn't tell, or he probably didn't allow Mark to tell the whole story, but you remember it. In Matthew, when Jesus comes walking out to the water, Peter looks out and he goes, Lord, if it's you, let me come out to you. And Peter actually gets out of the boat. How many of you would get out of the boat? I don't know. I don't know if I would get out of the boat. And no, I did not mean to do the 6-7 thing, even though I did do my hands like that. I saw that, yeah. 6 or 7 of you would get out of the boat. No, that's not what I'm doing. Peter got out of the boat. He looked at Jesus. He took his eyes off Jesus and he began to sink. Lord, save me. How many of us would never get out of the boat because we would be afraid to fail? It's safer in the boat. I don't trust Jesus with the water. There's waves. The wind hasn't stopped yet. He's not in the boat. Those waves are pretty big. I'm a fisherman. I know these things. And yet Peter says, Lord, let me come to you. If you can do that, I want to try it too. And I love Peter's spirit here because he gets out of the boat and he begins to walk on the waves. And as long as his eyes are on Jesus, he's okay. But as soon as he looks around at the world, he begins to seek, Lord, save me. His eyes are back on Jesus. Why? Because Jesus is enough. Why did he not let Mark tell this part? I don't know. Maybe he thought it would be bragging. Maybe he thought, you're not going to understand. I don't know why he didn't, but he didn't. And so here we see it. And when he got in the boat, John tells us they were immediately at their destination. They didn't understand. Now we're going to look at how he heals our brokenness. Look at verse 53. They crossed over. They came to the land at Bethsaida, right? Because that's where they were headed. But no, they didn't land at Bethsaida because the wind blew them off course to Gennesaret. So then instead of going straight across, they ended up getting blown south. Because sometimes the destination we think we're headed to isn't the ultimate destination that Christ is going to take us to. Yeah, I'm going to medical school. Till you're not. I'm going overseas to study until it doesn't work out. I'm going to have that perfect life, the dream house, the 2.5 kids, or at Cedarville, the 8.5 kids. Yeah, it's be fruitful and multiply. It's biblical, y'all. Somebody's over there shaking his head. Lord, no, please, no. You got to feed all those kids. Yeah, they were blown off course. Listen to me when I say this to you. Your destination may not be the place that you think it is. It's okay. Jesus is enough. Just keep following him. And when he redirects your path, you haven't failed. They didn't fail to reach their destination. They went the exact place Jesus wanted them to go. So what happens? We'll go quick through this. When they got out of the boat, the people immediately recognized him. And they went about the whole region, bringing all the sick people to him. And whenever they heard he was there, they would bring the people to him. And he came to the villages and cities and countrysides. They laid the sick in the marketplace and they implored him that he might just touch the fringe of his garment. And as many of them as touched them, they were made well. And that's what we see happening here. So let's get to our application. Here's what I have for you today. Number one, we have a forgetful faith. It would be real easy for us to criticize them. And Mark even does a little bit with the jab, but they didn't understand the bread because of the hardness of their heart. But let's be honest. The Lord has done amazing things for you in your life too, even though you're not as old as I am. And how quickly do we forget about those every time some new challenge comes our way? That's just who we are. We forget about the Lord's faithfulness to us and we start worrying and fretting. And the disciples did the same thing. They came to a problem they couldn't solve in their own power, and they, Jesus, this can't happen. We can't do this. We don't have the money to go buy this. And Jesus says, put them in groups and let's watch what happens. Jesus sees them. They're struggling. They're rowing. They're working hard. The wind's against them. It's a challenge. It's not easy. And he walks out to them, and they're afraid. They're terrified. Who is this? This is a ghost. No, it's me. It's I am. When are you going to get it? Actually, in Matthew, Peter gets it. Peter actually says, surely you are the Son of God. Now, why Mark didn't include that? Because if I were his English teacher, I'd be like, oh, you should have included that because that helps make your thesis that Jesus is the Son of God. But Peter apparently wouldn't let him. Number two, I want to tell you this. By God's grace, our failures don't define us. Some of you out there right now are afraid to fail. You're afraid to go try because you're afraid if you try, you will fail. And if you fail, then that means you're a failure. If you fail, it doesn't mean you're a failure. It just means you never tried. If you try enough, you're going to fail. You take enough last minute shots, you're going to miss some of them and you're going to lose some of the games. But if you never take the shot, it doesn't matter. Let me tell you how I felt. So we're in Colorado. Mule deer hunt's over. Now I'm after an elk. The guide says, if we hustle, we can cut off this other group. We're at elevation. My resting heart rate in Cedarville, 60 beats a minute. In Colorado, it's 71 beats a minute. I'm watching it on my watch. We start hiking and we're moving fast. By the time we get to the spot where we're supposed to be, I'm at 140 beats per minute. And he says, look, there goes the cow. There's a bull that will be following. Get ready. You got to take the shot. I look and all of a sudden I see it, but my heart's at 140 beats a minute. You don't know what that means? That means things are moving all around. It's a 300-yard shot. I've got a choice. Are you going to take the shot or are you not going to take the shot? I didn't get the job done. Am I a failure to you now? You don't care. You're like, why are you even telling us this story? Is it what? Come on, hurry up, just end the sermon. I got to go eat. You don't care that I missed the shot. Should I have taken the shot? You're never going to do something if you don't try. If you fail, does that mean you're a failure? Most people really don't care. You don't understand. I started this business and it failed. So start another one. You don't understand. I took this test and it didn't work out so well. So study harder. Remember, get up, lock arms, keep climbing the mountain, following after Jesus. And when you fall, you get up and you keep the same direction and you lock arms and you keep following Jesus because Jesus is enough. Your failures do not define you. Your relationship to Jesus is what defines you. And so I want you to fail, because if you never fail, it means you never tried anything. I want you to get out of the boat. I want you to sink in the waves and reach out to Jesus and have Jesus save you. I want you to go do big things for God. And if you fail while you're doing them, at least you're trying to do something for Jesus. It's okay to fail. It doesn't define you. Because Jesus is enough. All right, last word. We're coming up to Thanksgiving. Some of you are going home to amazing places. Be thankful. Be thankful for your friends. Be thankful for your mom and dad. Be thankful for what God's given you. Some of you may not be. I don't know. I don't know your story. I still want you to be thankful, though. The opposite of that bitterness that can grow into your heart is thankfulness. You're here. If you're here, you're a lot better off than most people. So this Thanksgiving, take time to be thankful to God for the good gifts he's given you. Be thankful for the parents and the friends. Be thankful for your salvation. Just take some time to be thankful. And remember, Jesus is enough. And you are loved. Dear Lord, would you help us not to be forgetful in our faith? Would you help us not to be afraid to fail? Would you help us to lean into you? Would you help us to realize that you truly are enough for us? That you are the prize. Jesus, would you be with all of these who are going home for Thanksgiving? Keep them safe as they travel. Help them to be thankful and help them to glorify you. Give them opportunities to share the gospel with friends or family members. Help them to have joy. Bring them back safely to us. And help us to serve you well, for you are worthy. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen. You are dismissed.